following episode depicts violence, murder, and incidents of domestic violence. Listener discretion is advised. It's been over 20 years since 32-year-old Candace Scola was found dead on the kitchen floor of her home on Knox Street in Worcester. She had been stabbed 13 times, including multiple times in her chest. She was found by co-workers after she didn't show up to work at Worcester Juvenile Court the day after the 4th of July holiday. The only suspect in the case is her estranged husband. He was the last person to see her alive. Welcome to Unsolved Worcester. I'm your host, Dan Yeager. In part two of our two-part episode series, we look at what happens following the murder of Candace Scola around July 3rd, 2002. 20 years later, there is still no closure for Candace's family, and the only suspect to be named in the case is her husband, Anthony Scola.
Unsolved Worcester is brought to you by the following sponsors. The016.com is a proud supporter of Unsolved Worcester. From all the latest local news to your favorite restaurant's latest specials, The016 is the one place to find everything you need to work, live, and play in Worcester. Check out The016.com today. Unsolved Worcester's aerial imagery is brought to you exclusively by New England SkyPix. New England SkyPix has provided imagery for both commercial and residential real estate, documented construction projects such as Polar Park, and various buildings in the Worcester and Boston area. New England SkyPix creates content and produces complete commercials and provides aerial footage for the film industry and video podcasts. New England SkyPix is fully insured and licensed for commercial work by the FAA. Call or text 774-452-4488 or visit newenglandskypix.com for residential or commercial inquiries. Be sure to follow New England SkyPix on Facebook and Instagram, and subscribe to New England SkyPix's YouTube page for some behind-the-scenes imagery of the making of Unsolved Worcester. You don't want to miss it. Looking for great ways to spend your weekend in Worcester? Want to know where to find the cheapest gas in the city? Want live traffic updates and where roadwork is taking place? For these and all things Worcester, visit thisweekinworcester.com. Before you leave the house each day, be sure to visit thisweekinworcester.com for the popular 5 Things You Need to Know Today in Worcester to stay in the know on everything happening in Worcester, day after day, week after week. And follow TWIW on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for breaking news, updates, and more. This Week in Worcester. Everything Worcester, every day of the week.
Unsolved Worcester takes a deep dive every Tuesday and Thursday into the unsolved murders and missing persons cases under investigation by Worcester Police Department's Detective Unit. We will be looking to the past to unsolved murders as far back as the early 1950s and 60s. The approach to Unsolved Worcester is this: shine a light on each of these cases. Put a life behind each victim's name. Provide a timeline of events and important details, and ask questions that still need to be answered. Our goal is to remind residents of the Worcester area, both past and present, that there are dozens of unsolved homicides and missing persons cases that need resolution. We hope we can be the spark needed to solve a case. As we mentioned last episode, of the dozens of unsolved murders under investigation by the Worcester Police Department, the 2002 murder of Candace Scola was followed more closely by local news outlets than most of the cases we will explore on Unsolved Worcester. At the time of her death, Candace was employed as a judicial secretary at Worcester Juvenile Court. Her husband, Anthony Scola, was a well-known lawyer in Worcester and had formerly served as an assistant district attorney in the Worcester County District Attorney's Office. When police arrived at the Scola's home on Knox Street on July 5th, they couldn't find the murder weapon and couldn't determine what kind of knife was used to kill Candace. There were no signs of a struggle or forced entry, and there was still some question of when Candace was killed. Due to the high temperatures over the 4th of July holiday, the medical examiner couldn't say one way or another if Candace was killed on the night of July 3rd, on July 4th, or early in the day on July 5th. What we do know is Scola was the last known person to see Candace alive on the night of July 3rd. Police told reporters that Scola was certainly part of the investigation. A report from September 2002 says police said Scola was being cooperative in the investigation and wasn't considered a suspect. However, over the years following Candace's death, that reporting changed. Sources told Telegram and Gazette columnist Diane Williamson, Worcester police detectives believed they had enough circumstantial evidence to charge Scola with Candace's murder. Worcester Magazine reported officers said off the record that they'd never considered anyone else as a possible suspect. And while Scola hadn't lived in the Knox Street home in months on July 3rd, the couple had been seen by neighbors in the yard together doing yard work. Scola was picked up by officers at the former Cactus Pete's restaurant on Park Avenue. He was questioned for several hours and provided police with a detailed account of where he was on July 4th and the days before and after the holiday, including telling police he was at the Knox Street home until 10:30 p.m. on July 3rd. During questioning, police asked Scola why he had multiple cuts on his hand. Scola said the cuts were from installing an air conditioner at the home on July 3rd. A year after the murder, in July 2003, Scola would tell Telegram and Gazette columnist Diane Williamson that he cut easily from the air conditioner because of a family condition where he's, quote, very thin-skinned. He said, quote, in any case, police always look to the husband or boyfriend first, but I don't think there's anything that points to me. There are several things about this case that seem out of place and unbelievably left unanswered. When Candace's co-workers decided to check in on Candace on July 5th, 2002, she says things were out of place when she arrived. According to a report in the Telegram and Gazette, the co-worker said the back door of the home was locked, which was unusual because it was typically left unlocked. She said Candace's Saab convertible was parked in the garage, but the garage door was wide open. Two newspapers were still on the front porch, likely from July 4th and July 5th. And what stood out the most was an open window at the porch and a couch inside the home pushed forward, almost like someone had to move the couch to get in through the window, or at least set up that way to make it look like someone had climbed through the window. There are also multiple reports of a break-in at the home on Knox Street just days after Candace's murder. Police had provided very little information about what the co-worker witnessed at the Knox Street home before finding Candace dead on the kitchen floor, or about the reported break-in. The idea of a possible motive was hinted at in local reports. But since a charge was never brought forward against Anthony Scola, the notion of a motive hasn't been clearly expressed. In the years leading up to Candace's death, finding himself thousands of dollars in debt, Scola filed for bankruptcy in 1999. About a month after Candace's murder in 2002, Scola recorded a deed transferring the title of the home on Knox Street from Candace's sole ownership to joint ownership between Candace and Scola. According to court records, the deed presented by Scola was signed on June 26, 1999. Why he waited to record the deed until after Candace's death is unknown. In November 2002, a temporary court order was lifted and Scola was able to return to the Knox Street home. It was described as a win for Scola. However, the same day the court order was lifted, a motion was filed to reopen Scola's 1999 bankruptcy case. In May 1999, Scola testified in his bankruptcy hearing that he didn't own the Knox Street home. Now, in November 2002, red flags went up when Scola recorded the deed for the property. In June 1999, just a month after testifying in his bankruptcy case that he didn't own the property, the recorded deed completely contradicting his testimony in the bankruptcy case. But it didn't matter. The Chapter 7 trustee in the bankruptcy case was unable to reopen Scola's case, and Scola was able to move back into the Knox Street home and focus on settling his personal debts. Months later, in 2003, the Knox Street home was listed for sale. In late 2003, a court ruled, as Candace's sole beneficiary, $10,000 in life insurance benefits shouldn't be withheld from Scola. And though it took a while to sell the home, including one sale reportedly falling through in 2003 after the prospective buyers got cold feet due to all the attention and controversy surrounding the investigation. According to city records, in May 2004, less than 2 years after Candace's murder, Scola sold the home for $225,000, nearly $40,000 more than the asking price. Ultimately, Scola was right when he said there's nothing to point at him as responsible for Candace's murder. Police never definitely pointed to Scola or anyone else for killing Candace. And Worcester County District Attorney John Conte, Scola's former employer, wouldn't point at Scola either. In December 2005, over 3 years after Candace's murder, District Attorney Conte named a special prosecutor to review the evidence. At the time, Conte cited both Candace's and Scola's close ties to the local legal community as the reason for assigning the special prosecutor. Many wondered aloud what took Conte so long to name a special prosecutor or recuse himself and his office from the case, since Conte did hire Scola as an assistant district attorney. Others questioned Conte's motives, some even suggesting it was a political maneuver on his part doing the right thing in a high-profile case just ahead of an election year. Even Scola's lawyer, Michael Wilcox, told the Telegram and Gazette he was surprised it took so long for Conte to move the case out of the Worcester County office. Wilcox said, quote, "You can take the position that Skull is the husband, but I'm assuming the reason they didn't charge him is that they didn't have the evidence." A major issue in the case is the DNA evidence. Skola was often at the Knox Street home, so any of Skola's DNA found at the crime scene would have to connect him to the murder, like DNA on a murder weapon. A year later in 2006, 4 years after Candace's murder, Conte would tell Worcester Magazine that Skola is a suspect and, quote, "he's the only one we looked at." Conte's assigned special prosecutor in the case, Joseph Gaughan, investigated the case for 2 years, but never made a recommendation to put the case before a grand jury. The summer of 2008, Gaughan died following a battle with cancer. Prior to his death, and over 5 years following Candace's murder, the case was moved to Plymouth County District Attorney's Office, late in 2007. In late 2008, it was reported that the Plymouth County DA's office was calling witnesses in the case in front of an investigative grand jury. And that's where it ended. The last report was the case was still active in the Plymouth County DA's office. As years passed, Skola remained adamant about his innocence in Candace's murder. For several years following Candace's death, her friends, family members, and former co-workers held a vigil every year on Candace's birthday on July 9th. In 2003, Worcester State University's Women's Studies program started an annual Candace Allen Skola Memorial Lecture and dedicated a meditation garden in her name. Candace was a Worcester State student and vice president of the school's Geography Honor Society. 10 years after Candace's death, Worcester Juvenile Court dedicated a children's library in Candace's name. The children's library is called the Candace Allen Children's Library. The court purposefully removed Candace's married name, Skola. Thank you for listening. Anyone with information about the murder of Candace Skola are asked to contact the Worcester Police Detective Bureau at 508-799-8651 or send an anonymous text to 274-637. Write TIPWPD and your message, or send an anonymous web-based message at worcesterma.gov/police. I'm Dan Yeager. Come back next time as we look at the unsolved murder of Nathan Otero, killed some 10 years ago at the end of Clayson Road at Indian Lake Beach. Be sure to visit Unsolved Worcester on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Unsolved Worcester. Listen to all episodes for free at unsolvedworcester.com and podcast streaming platforms including Spotify, iTunes, and more. Special thanks to Harvest Design in Northboro, the extensive research provided by Alex London and the Worcester Public Library, the Worcester Police Department, the City of Worcester, Ron Scott at New England SkyPix, and our sponsors for making this possible. The Unsolved Worcester podcast music is provided by Tom LaBelzik of the Worcester Jazz Collective. This episode of Unsolved Worcester is written and produced by Pat Sargent. Drone footage provided by New England SkyPix. Videography and editing by Colin Turner. Victim images are courtesy of the Worcester Police Department. Sponsorship information announcer Chandler Walsh. Unsolved Worcester website and logo art by Harvest Design. Visit harvest-design.com. Be sure to check out the video for this episode with exclusive aerial views and more on our Unsolved Worcester YouTube page. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button.